My name is Dee Bechtel, and the title of this session is There Life After Divorce, and Does the Church Care? 5. Let's start out by singing in those books that are on some of your chairs. Number 44, Blessed Be the Tie That Binds.
Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love. The
The idea for this topic first arose last summer when I was at Holden, and if I can use you as an example, Linda, my friend Linda was expressing a concern about programs at Holden that they seem to be really intensely family-oriented. In her observation, and in mine too, really, there were a lot of families here that consisted of two parents and several children, but very few families that consisted of one parent and either one or more children. And it's been my observation since then, as I've been thinking about this throughout the year, that many of our churches are composed in the same way, that we see the activities of the churches as centered around families defined as two parents and some children, and oftentimes we exclude, either consciously or unconsciously, people who don't fit into that category. In the outside world, I'm a divorce lawyer, and I have experienced via my clients a lot of the pain that goes into divorces and a lot of the hurting that's going on when people are in that situation. And now I'm experiencing it on my own, too, because I'm going through a divorce as well. And I can now speak from personal experience in terms of how a divorced person, how our attitudes may change when we're going through a divorce. If we're in the same church that we have been previously, and suddenly a divorce is happening to us for whatever reason, it becomes really hard to admit that to the church, because at least my feeling was that the church was going to be judgmental on me. The church was going to say, and there were going to be at least some people in the church that were going to say, divorce is wrong. The Bible says you're not supposed to get divorced, or you're only supposed to get divorced if there's adultery involved. So I was really afraid, even though I was at the time in a church that had been a very warm, nurturing nest. I found myself experiencing a lot of fear in being upfront with what I was going through and what was happening to me with a lot of people in my church, because I was afraid they were not going to be warm and accepting of me. And I really wanted them to. I wanted them to love me anyway, even though this large amount of hurt was happening to me at the time. So it took a lot of courage for me, at least, and I suspect that's true. I'm not the only one that's ever felt that way. It took a lot of courage for me to say to my congregation openly, I'm going to be moving away, I'm going to be moving out of this community, and I want your prayers and I want your support. And I want it in spite of the fact, or maybe because of the fact, that I'm getting a divorce. My other concern is that oftentimes we are not the most welcoming place for people who are going through a divorce who haven't been in the church before. And I think this is a real ministry that our churches could be doing, we should be doing, that we should be openly proclaiming that we are a loving and accepting and warm and open place where people who are going through a lot of hurt of whatever kind, divorce being one of those kinds of hurts, can come and find some answers and find support and find people who accept them and love them and have some help for their kinds of needs. I think, first of all, we need to realize, and it may seem ludicrous to say this, but I think this part of some people's reaction in churches or anywhere to a divorced person is, I can't get too close to that person because divorce may somehow be contagious. In one of the other groups the other day, somebody made a comment about mental illness being contagious or mental retardation being contagious, and somehow we tend to treat people in those categories like that. Divorce, I think, we may feel it's even more contagious because we may have some feelings about our own marriages. You know, my own marriage may not be all that stable, and so if I make friends with this divorced woman, she's going to be after my husband, and my marriage is going to crumble too, and maybe we really do at bottom feel that it's going to be contagious in that way. I can certainly speak for myself, and I think I can probably speak for a whole lot of other divorced people, in that that's not what we're interested in. That's not what we want out of the church. We're not interested in seducing your husband or your wife, and we're not interested in seducing the pastor if he or she happens to be single either. But what we do want is to be accepted for the unique gifts that we have to offer. Divorce doesn't stop me from being a person, the same person I was before, with my own set of talents and gifts that I have to offer to the church. And the fact that I'm divorced doesn't make me any less able to lead a discussion group on anything else, or to teach Sunday school, or to do all the kinds of things that I could do before. In some ways, maybe it qualifies me better to do that because I have now an extra measure of knowing the hurt that some of the other people may have been feeling, maybe on different issues, but I think hurting people all need a lot of the same things. We need you to acknowledge the fact that we are grieving. Be aware that divorce is very much like the death process, that what we go through is very much like what you experience when you lose a loved one by death, only it's a lot longer. It doesn't end. There isn't a way you can work through it and come to some final point because, there may be ultimately, and hopefully there is ultimately, but the whole process seems to recur again and again. And for some of us, it recurs every other weekend when we either send children off to visit with the other parent or when we have children come to be us, to see us for only a weekend and then have to send them back to that other parent again. And that's part of the grieving process all over again. And it's also a very difficult situation for children. And so if you're involved in Sunday school classes or children's programs of any sort, you need to be especially aware that the children are going through a whole lot of turmoil and maybe feeling some guilt about that, because children have a tendency to internalize the fact that their parents are separating and feel responsible for that. They have a tendency, or at least a lot of children have a tendency to say, well, maybe if I'd been a better kid, then my parents would be back together again. And ultimately, I think just about every child really wants his or her parents to be back together again. They want to be back to that same old way that seemed comfortable and knowable, no matter how bad it may have been, no matter how much bickering or fighting or even abuse that may have been going on. That's the known, and that's so much more comfortable than the unknown. Divorced people need a sense of family in the church. We did a workshop like this, similar to this one, last week, and one of the people in the workshop said, as a single person, I have a really hard time at holidays, because holidays are, especially some holidays, are really family occasions. And when you're in a torn family of some sort, you know, or in a restructured family that's different from some of the ones that you're used to, it's particularly important to be included in somebody else's family for special holiday times. So you might give some consideration to including somebody who is in a restructured family, a single parent family, or maybe even if there is a widow with children or a widower with children that could use that extra little support. Remember, especially at family holiday time, that those are, again, the hurting time, and sometimes then the grief process starts all over again. We need also your help to find who we are. And I've experienced this with a lot of my divorce clients. It was incredible for me to discover that, well, one client, for example, her name was Linda, too. Linda wasn't my client. But the other Linda was probably close to 40 years old, had been married approximately 15 years, I think, had one small child, and had been in a very sheltered marriage. And I say that maybe this kind of marriage is more common for those of us who are older. We were taken care of a lot. We went from daddy's house to husband's house, and both daddy and husband always paid the bills and always made financial decisions, and always took charge of the family affairs in some way. Well, when a woman out of that situation is getting a divorce, Linda, my client, didn't even know how to budget. She really had no idea how to exist on a certain specified amount of support. Now, it happened that her husband was a dentist, and so he had a very good income, and he was reasonably generous in giving her both child support and spousal support, even while the divorce was in progress. But even with, you know, a pretty adequate amount of support, she just had no idea how to budget that. And now that seems difficult to imagine, that there are people in the world that have existed and don't know how to do those pretty simple things that we kind of assume high school students would know how to do. Those are the kinds of things that oftentimes we don't realize, where also the church can be of help. We can simply say, as a friend, you know, are you having problems? Is there anything that I can help you with? That may be a shoulder to cry on. That may be telling that person where they can find a book, maybe a book in the church library, on how to do budgeting, or how do you go find a job if you're out there looking for a job for the first time, or simply, where do I make the contacts to find out about going back to school so that I can become employable? And all those things that seem to us to be relating to people in their late teens or early 20s, but suddenly are very important issues for people coming out of a divorce, particularly women coming out of a divorce, because oftentimes it isn't the man that's the sheltered one. It's the woman that doesn't have these really basic skills. But primarily, we need to know from you, our fellow people in the churches, that God still loves us. That we can find a faith, and that you still love us. That there, you know, something isn't necessarily unlovable about us just because our marriages have collapsed. And I think maybe, again, that's a condition that's more common to women. I think women generally tend to feel guilty if the marriage didn't work. If the marriage didn't work, it's my fault, or at least that's what I hear society telling me, and sometimes the church telling me, more so than telling my ex-husband that it's his fault that the marriage didn't work. Now, there's obviously a whole variety of situations, and there's whole varieties of degrees of wrongness in this. But I don't think it's the church's job to dwell on who's wrong in the situation. I think it's the church's job to help support and help heal those hurts. On that subject, I was looking for some books that would be helpful in this regard. And I'm sorry to say that I found a whole lot of books, supposedly on the Christian view of divorce, that were very judgmental. There are books out there that are saying, number one, it's wrong to get divorced in the first place for any other reason other than adultery, because that's what the Bible says. The only reason that you can divorce is for adultery. There's a whole lot of books out there that say, if you are divorced, it's wrong to get married, remarried, for any reason other than, well, there are some that say, written by men, who say the only reason for getting remarried is if you can't control your sexual passions. That seems to me a pretty bad reason for getting remarried, or for getting married for that matter. I was happy to find, however, this book that's in the bookstore. It's called Growing Through Divorce by Jim Smoke. And it's a how-to, step-by-step kind of thing. It's written so that you read a chapter and then you could, there's a space that you can write in, you know, how am I doing on this score? And then go back and check yourself. So it's a working through the process step-by-step. Jim Smoke is a professional counselor that works out of a church in Southern California. He conducts classes for people going through a divorce, and his whole thesis is you don't have to be just going through a divorce, you can be growing through a divorce. You can use it as a learning experience. It doesn't just have to be kind of recovering or picking yourself up off the floor, but it can be learning and making yourself into a more whole person, and that's exciting. Some other good books, or another good book that's in the bookstore here, it was written by Ken Erickson, who at least was here on campus.
He's here.
He's still here. Okay. Just a delightful person, a very small book called Please, Lord, Untie My Tongue. And it's suggestions about what you can say to a person in a divorce, but in other situations too, when there's illness, death, divorce, or imprisonment, is how, you know, these kinds of hurting situations, what you can say, how you can be of help to someone who may be sitting next to you in the pew that's obviously hurting in some of these kinds of situations. This one, I haven't read all the way through. I have just rather glanced at it rather quickly. But it appears to be a really nice, helpful book as well, called Single Again, This Time with Children, by Alice Stolper Pepler. She begins by saying, one of the reasons I was impressed with it when I picked it up in the bookstore was she begins by saying, not only did I go through divorce once, but I went through it twice. And that's that's a double dose of the guilt. That's a double dose of the judgment, because some of us who feel like we're reasonably open to the question of divorce can say, okay, you can make a mistake once, we're still in the having made a mistake kind of category, but twice, it's a bit hard to forgive you after twice. So this, I figure somebody that's open enough to say that and then go on to say how I dealt with my children and how I raised children as a single parent has to be pretty open and honest and telling from her own point of view, and I think that's exciting. So as I say, I haven't read this one all the way through, but it appears to be very helpful. I want you to jump in when you have questions or comments as I go along, too. Don't let me be the whole show here, because obviously I don't have all the answers. I'm sure all of you have had some experience, either of your own or with a close friend. Divorce is a situation that touches most of us very closely, and sometimes all the time, some of us deal with it frequently. My main thesis is that I really want churches to get involved in the issue of divorce. I think that every church ought to have a singles group, if not only for single or for divorced people, but for single people in whatever category, because single people have some difficult times just simply dealing with life, dealing with parenting of children for one thing, but if there are children, just looking for other adult companionship that's within the church context. Somehow the idea of singles bars doesn't appeal to me very much, but if that's the only place that I can find other adult companionship, that's a pretty sad situation. And most of our churches, I think, have couples groups, but most of those are not very welcoming atmospheres for a single person.
How important those groups too, that they don't become single clubs. I've heard that complaint too from other people who are single.
Mm.
The church is real good at wanting, instead of saying, well, your lifestyle now is a good one, to affirm that, it's more like, well, we got to get you matched up as soon as possible.
And
that's reality for a lot of people. I'm not sure as much with I don't know that experience with divorced persons, but just with single people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would kind of tend to back in with
that.
I would tend to navigate to a family-oriented group as opposed to a single parent group, probably, because I value family values as opposed to a single parent values.
Mm-hmm.
So I prefer to hide in, and I do that a lot. I hide in a family group and people don't know the difference. I have people even up here that ask me where's my pastor. It's a common reaction because I've been alone for so long. I don't know any parenting skills but being a single parent because I was my daughter was 7 years old and that's all I know. But in a couple of her comments I could elaborate on, people a lot of times used to say, I should have you over for dinner, and I think it'd just be great and please don't go to any extra trouble. I just enjoy the adult companionship, and I still do now. Enjoy adult companionship for dinner, and I don't care if he fits box macaroni and cheese. It isn't the dinner, it's just the idea that somebody else is paying. And the other thing that you made a comment on, it's death and divorce are the two, on a scale of stresses in your life, those are the two highest stresses. But as you see death, you can bury the casket and hopefully come to some resolution of the death of your spouse. Divorce, particularly with children, you never put the casket away. You never put the casket away. And you always, like she said, always dealing with the other parent. You're always seeing glimpses of the past. And if nothing else, your own children mirror your spouse in certain ways. And you have to learn to deal with that. So you never can put it away. And I think that's probably the most difficult thing. You never can put it away. Mm-hmm. And until you've been there, I don't think that a lot of times people don't really you really don't know what to say. And like that lady said, you made that comment, the lady whose husband was in a mental hospital, mm-hmm. and she said, well, don't talk about it. And that's a lot of people's reaction, let's just not talk about it, and then go away.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah,
that's
right. And
that's a common response. Mm-hmm. Well, I had people shy away from me, and I know it was, they thought I had the plague, and they certainly, and I think you were right when you said, they fear their own selves. That's one condition in life, that there's no drug you can take. You know, there's nothing you can do maybe to prevent it your own self.
Did you have the experience of friends, husbands coming over to help you?
Oh, no.
One thing or another?
No, I was very, very fortunate because I had a lifeline of support that was unrelated to my husband. And so I was able to, and I was very fortunate. I had two or three families that literally pulled me out, because I wouldn't even be here today if it wasn't for a couple, three different families that stayed with me and made me realize that I could become a single parent and I could do what I have to do. But that's so important. If you don't have a support system and you have children, you just kind of go to pieces.
No, what I meant was that I would have women friends. Some friends of mine whose husbands would come over.
Oh,
just
well,
to make sure I was getting along all right.
I at one point I did have my phone disconnected for 2 months in a response to try to keep some people still away from me. You lose friends, or you find out where the meanings are, I think. Some people are afraid, and they just can't deal with it. You can't do anything for that. You can't do anything for that. It's no different than any other condition in life that leaves you with a negative, and that's a divorce is considered a negative.
Are there other comments that you'd like to share?
I just wanted to
go
say
ahead.
Something. I had a friend who was divorced about 4 years ago, and I talked to her. Lots of okay. She wasn't a really good friend, but she was a person I knew pretty well. And I always felt really uncomfortable because I got the information secondhand. Did you hear that Patty and Dave were getting a divorce after they were divorced? And we played tennis together. That was about the extent of our friendship. But I talked to her, and I tried to be really warm and friendly to her. And I always sort of alluded to, how are you doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I never really made mention of it. And I thought, since she never brings it up, and I opened the door, I'm going to respect her right to not talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of drifted apart, and when I see her now, it's sort of a wave. And someone told me that she really lost contact with the people that could not talk to her about it. And I realized in that little book that you held up, the Ken Erickson book,
mm-hmm.
if I had said these words, it's the things to say in a difficult situation,
mm-hmm.
if I'd said, Patty, I hear that you and Dave are divorced. I don't know what to say now.
Mm-hmm.
She could have taken it from there. I felt like I should give her the option to bring it up, and she really couldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
But if I had just said, I hear you're divorced, and I don't know what to say now. I mean, she might have said, praise the Lord, I've been praying for that guy or five. And so, you know, I have had that approach. We heard somebody say, that's too bad, and I go, too bad. So
yeah.
I think just putting it back on them, and that
mm-hmm.
book has really got, it's not canned phrases, but a feeling
mm-hmm.
of, I hear that this situation has come about, and I don't know where to take it from here.
Mm-hmm.
And he cites an example of saying that to someone, and she proceeded to give a 20-minute discussion on
mm-hmm.
how devastating it had been for
right.
her.
Right, right.
So I think that book is really helpful.
Yes. It is. It's just a tiny book, but
uh-huh.
it's really packed with a lot
mm-hmm.
of good things. Yes, your statement about you don't know whether to say congratulations or, yes, condolences. You know, one person that I announced that I had filed for a divorce to said, oh, congratulations. And I said, oh, thank you. That's so nice. She says, well, I assume that if you're the one that filed, you meant, you know, this is what you wanted to happen. And it is hard for people to know, you know, but...
It's just saying, hey, I don't know what to say, but I'm interested in hearing if you want to talk, is really helpful, because that opens the door. My sister works with children who are in, are just becoming handicapped situations. Either they're involved in some kind of a serious illness in the hospital, and she teaches them to open the door, to say to somebody, you know, I realize that I don't have this leg anymore, but I'm still a person, or I'm still interested in baseball, or whatever it is, you know. She teaches them up front to say, to talk about their handicap, and divorce is a handicap. And so maybe those of us who are just need to know how to open the door, need to come up with some opening phrase that says to the other person, I want to talk about this, so that it's partly our responsibility too. Coming to church and having to deal with all those things that she was used to dealing with as half of a couple,
yeah,
was just too painful. That was part of the reminder about the former marriage. And I agree with the situation about no matter how terrible the marriage was, and no matter how much you think you want the divorce, it still is a painful experience. When it finally happens, it's just this tearing up of your insides. And that's tough to deal with. I don't want to put too much guilt on churches. I mean, if you've gone through this kind of thing, you know, with, you know, you've tried to make contact with this person, you've tried to contact her personally or make other people aware that this person is in a hurting situation, and you've gone the second mile in terms of trying to contact this person, and this person is still rejecting your efforts. I mean, there's not a whole lot we can do. That person has to acknowledge that they need the church or that they need that contact too. But what I'm suggesting is that there are just ways that both all of us can make it a lot more easy. Yes?
I have an experience with my church community from being very warm and very nurturing. But my husband and I were both very active there in a lot of things. We were really a couple, and it was where I experienced a lot of loss about me at that church, and as a result, I turned it back way off. And it was truly, it had nothing to do with my system. There was just so many memories there. And I've been divorced 7 years, and it's only been in recent times that what I've done is I used to go back to him at the beginning, you know, and it was very strong for me. But it's only now that really I'm beginning to, honestly, I've experienced it. It's very funny because, you know, he's remarried and he's still shot my baby. And, I'm now really at times having to say a lot about it, and it makes me mad as much as I really don't think that I had that thought in my mind.
No,
he doesn't. But I mean, we had a situation there for a while where like the whole couple was going, and that was, I mean, everybody was beginning to, you know, run, but they didn't know what was going to happen.
And then it's a large group, so that's,
yeah, I mean, yeah. But it was never because of Emmanuel that I wasn't hanging around there. It was hard for me. I mean, except the ones who would ask me, you know, how to leave.
Yeah.
And I'd be like,
Good. Yeah, you need to develop a comeback. Yes.
I think I could talk to a woman in the world comeback, but I don't know how to talk to her.
There was a man in the last session that we did this last week that was saying that his church had been very supportive of him, you know, bringing over the casseroles and kind of, you know, taking care of him. But then it also turned out that he had custody of his children. It was his wife who had just left him and the children. And somebody in the group asked him, you know, well, what was the church's response to your wife then? And I suspect there was a lot more judgment going on of her in that situation, you know, because, again, we're assuming some degree of fault in this kind of thing, even though our divorce laws now in most states say there's no fault, you don't have to prove anybody was wrong in this situation. We still have a tendency to try to decide which person in the couple was the problem. and it's not either one, it's both. No, I suppose you can't say always anything, but... I can't say always on anything, but I just know that when I have a new divorce client coming in, you know, and I'm getting all the whole story and finding out what all the details of the situation is, it oftentimes looks really black and white when you're talking to one person in the situation, but then you get the other side of the story and you can see that I think more times than not, it's really a combination of a lot of factors, some of which may not be entirely in the control of either of the people. It's the situation. Yes.
Why is it so important to determine the court details of the situation? Why couldn't the church just be much more outgoing and nurturing if the assumption of your judgment may be necessary?
Oh, sure. Yes. I agree. What I'm saying is that I, as a lawyer, when a client comes into my office, need to know those details, of course,
okay,
in order to represent that person, but no, I don't think that's necessary at all from the church's point of view. We just need to know that this is a person that's hurting, in my opinion, and that we need to extend the healing. Yes.
I think it's
As a matter of fact, an area that my practice has developed into is divorce mediation, where I work on a team approach with a mental health therapist. And we sit down with the divorcing couple, there are four of us then, around a table or in a room, and work together through the couple actually working out their own divorce settlement agreement. They decide what's a reasonable division of property and support and all of those kinds of issues. That's a real healthy thing, because you're not pitting the people against one another. They're not both hiring a lawyer to fight out their battles in court and then both be unhappy with the decision that the judge hands down. Generally, after you walk out of a courtroom after a divorce hearing, everybody feels like they've lost. And mediation really begins that healing process. It shows the people that they can talk to each other, they can do some problem solving of their own, they can learn new ways of communicating with each other, not necessarily with the goal of putting that relationship back together again, but with the goal of learning to communicate with each other enough so that they can handle children and two-parenting and those kinds of things in the future. And it sounds like there wasn't enough of that, or this friend of yours that you described didn't have enough of that kind of concept about what can be the good outcome of a divorce. You know, apparently she thinks that the only way to make you feel better is by making the other person feel worse.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to be on your own. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, right. Well, right. And it's also, it would seem to me to be more affirming to say, hey, I really like you, and you really are a great person, and how it's neat that you've had enough strength to endure this and to come through it and to grow without tearing down the other person. Other comments? Questions?
I have a number of people in my church who have been divorced, and those with whom I've had the opportunity to speak about it, and I've
some of the things would be, for instance, to open up couples groups to single people, for one thing, you know, not make that division. But another thing would be just simply to have classes on single parenting, or places where single people of all ages, not necessarily, and I think generally we have a tendency to think about single people are people who are probably under 30, but there are a whole lot of us who are over 30 that are also single and need, have some of the kind of special needs, particularly when we have children. I would guess that, and I haven't experienced singles clubs either in the church or out of it, but I would guess that if that group had some other purpose other than being a singles club, for instance, if it was a single parenting kind of thing, you know, where you could come and talk about child problems, or if you don't want to get into that area, you know, make it, well, what in one church that I've experienced calls a koinonia group, where you have study, you read a book together, or you read the Bible together, and then have prayer and sharing in addition to that. You know, those kinds of things, just any kind of situation where people can meet other people on a small group level, and you get to know each other, you know, can break down some of those barriers and help people meet each other without having the meat market approach. Well, one of the, that what you're describing is what I was envisioning when I was talking about koinonia groups, and that's just a name for them in some places. But I think any way that you do it, when you break a larger congregation down into small groups, then you're encouraging that sort of close friendship that can become the extended family or the support group for anybody going through any kind of a hurting situation. And that's, you know, there's nothing unique about people, divorced people, as compared to any other kind of people with an emotional hurt. We just need some way to work through it and to heal it with the support of people. And in my opinion, the church is the best place to do that, because we really do have something to offer people who have not been a part of our churches, who are going through a divorce. We can say, look, some of the answers are here. The church really has the healing power to do that. We just need to focus it and to let people know that we have it available and to be that healing church.